Chema. So it's every time one dips into the writings of the mother, one is struck by the sheer fact that she does not treat spirituality like a linear approach. By linear approach, I mean up till here there is the mind, then beyond the mind there is the spiritual domain. So if you have to take to the spiritual life, you have to discard it. She brings in rather the spiritual consciousness everywhere and in everything. And it is something so beautiful, because in every sphere of life, this is exactly what Sri Aurobindo's integral yoga is about. It's not about abandoning this life, but of transforming this life. And when we read her writing on every subject, like for example, all that we see today happening in the world, she has something to say 100 years back, which if we read today looks like, oh, she is speaking as if she is speaking today. And I'll just read a few lines before I go to the main subject which I have taken out. So she is speaking about peace upon earth, world unity we all want. And she says something very interesting. There is a message to America which the mother gave in 1949, 4th of August. Stop thinking that you are of the West and others of the East. All human beings are of the same divine origin and means meant to manifest upon earth the unity of this origin. By unity of this origin means each country, nation represents some aspect of the divine. So I always feel when I look at India that it really is the soul of the world. And even from the heart, like if you really look at India, even as a simply, what shall I say, as an organ, if you look at the image of India, of course it's Durga, people have drawn that, but it also gives the impression of a heart. And if you look at India, even in the origin, it's very amazing that it's one unique country which breaks away from Africa. Actually, you can see the rift, it's called as Rift Valley. If you look at, I have been there and seen, so you will see this is the place from which India was torn, and then it traveled all the way, and then it struck into Asia, and then the Himalayas came into existence way, way back. So it is the heart and the soul of the world. That's its purpose. Similarly, French, if you see the subtlety of the French intellect, standing for freedom, standing for brotherhood, for unity. If you see America, it's about material progress. I mean, even travel there, you will feel the denseness of matter despite everything. Resources are abundant, material resources, just unimaginable. So every country, we could go on, represents something or the other with which we can create the entire. If you take the divine Purusha, then each represents something or the other. And they should find their place. But by thinking that I am from the East and somebody is from the West or vice versa, it doesn't help. It creates division. And then she says, the earth will enjoy lasting and living peace only when men understand that they must be truthful and sincere even in their international dealings. More and more we are realizing that how far we are from this. For the governments, honesty lies not only in saying what they are doing, but also in doing what they say. And then she says that how this peace will eventually come about. So each of us has to do our little bit, but two very interesting things which I read, which I thought we must, all of us have surely some role to play. So what is that role? One of them is, she says, it is only by the growth and establishment of the consciousness of human unity that a true and lasting peace can be achieved upon earth. All means leading towards this goal are welcome. One of the reasons why she created Auroville was this, to create the spirit of human unity. And the mother used the word, it's a Tower of Babel in reverse. So we all know Tower of Babel, the story is there in the it's a Christian story that, you know, they wanted to build a tower right to heaven. We also have our version of this story that Ravan wanted to build a tower to heaven. So they called all human beings, came together, and they started building the tower. So the devil was very worried. So how he could prevent it? He simply created a state of confusion in the minds of people so that if somebody said one thing, the other understood something else. It's the devil's mischief. It's the cause of most quarrels upon earth, including husband-wife. I'm just rushing to say husband-wife. Because you say one, how often people say, but I didn't mean to say this. Yes, that means the Asura of Babel is at work. So that's why the child's language is called Babel. We use the word Babel because what children are saying, you don't understand. So it comes from the story of the Tower of Babel. So they started fighting with each other. They were meant to build together. But if A said something, B misunderstood it. B said something, C misunderstood it. So they could never build the tower, and devil was very happy that, look here, finally I could have my way. So mother uses the word Tower of Babel in reverse. What does it mean? So it is being built from the other side. When we look at these stories, very amazing. She said it is the divine who will enforce it. So what did she do? She forcibly brought. Forcibly means she sent a word. And how many countries? I think 171 or something, or 172, around that figure. Countries joined together at the call of the divine mother. She didn't compel anyone who could come together and build a place called Auroville, which will help in the unity of the world. So she brought these people, their mud from these different places were brought, and they had to not swear but pledge in the name of the divine consciousness. This is a pledge of our will. So Russians said, we don't believe in God, divine. So she said, doesn't matter, what do you believe in as your highest? They said perfection. She said, all right. So they used the word perfection. We are willing servitors, something like that, of the perfection, divine perfection. No, just perfection. So this is how Auroville came into existence. And if you see very interestingly, closely, last 2-3 years, world has been on the boil. And Auroville is also on the boil. Very fascinating. There is a correspondence between the two. You create, this is how occult action of yajna. Yajnas used to work like that. So you are doing it at one place, but it has an effect upon the collectivity. So this is exactly how one can actually see this correspondence. Recent events, 2 years, something, lot of struggle for unity within Auroville, and you see the world over now. Suddenly, last 2-3 years specifically, it's not that world has ever been at peace because men have to grow in consciousness, but suddenly all this coming together. So one has to work where one has to work. And she says, it is only by the growth and establishment of the consciousness of human unity that a true and lasting peace can be achieved upon earth. This is the purpose mother spoke about Auroville. She said it is meant to create human unity. And Pranabdha would say, mother, you are trying something absolutely impossible. These were his words, like, you know, this is madness. She simply laughed. She neither contradicted it nor said anything. Basically, she knew the enormous difficulties of this work. Because you put people together from different places, and the famous preoccupation of human beings is to fight. They'll fight. And they fought. They are fighting. And she said it is the one chance to save the world from the catastrophe of the Third World War. Several places she has said that it's an occult action, occult formation. And if people within Auroville can get together, it will prevent the Third World War. So this one part of it. All means leading toward this goal are welcome, although the external ones have a very limited effect. However, the most important, urgent, and indispensable of all is a transformation of the human consciousness itself, an enlargement of and conversion in its working. See, in 1960, U Thant, who was the United Nations General Secretary, that time he made precisely this remark. that it seems if human beings don't change, we cannot have anything like United Nations last for long. But he made a very intuitive remark that, and perhaps it is time that we change as human beings. Obviously, he was inspired at that moment and spoke like that. But look, the way United Nations is going, and all this has been predicted. If you read Mother and Shobhita's writings, you just wonder that what have they left for us to ponder. A long, long back, someone had gone to President Kennedy, and this I know first-hand story. So, the ambassador of India went to the President Kennedy and said, there is a problem, and night means morning, 3 o'clock, he was given the attendance that, you know, India is under attack from the Chinese. He called the CIA chief, put down the map, and the CIA chief knew where all they have come. He was not in a position to say. They had come till Tejpur, we all know that. And then, so he said, anyways, we'll help another democracy at least. But then he took out, he asked him that, you people were already told by an Indian 2 years back. So this is 62. He said, 2 years back that there is a threat from China. You didn't understand. He said, 2 years back who? He took out the human cycle, Sri Aurobindo. And then all that he could say is, sir, this was 1949, not 2 years back. This was almost a decade, almost 2 decades, because it was written from 1914 onwards. And Sri Aurobindo speaks of the threat from Red China via Tibet. And Mother spoke about it even in 71. And we keep ignoring to our peril. So she says the important thing is change of consciousness. And then she gives some measures. Then she is asked, she says again, this is a message to the World Conference. The future of the earth depends on a change of consciousness. The only hope for the future is a change of man's consciousness, and the change is bound to come. So this is a prediction, she says. The change is bound to come. You can't help it. It's no more left to men to decide. She has given this message very clearly. It's not left to men to decide. The decision has been taken. You can collaborate. But it is left to men to decide. Decide what? If they will collaborate for this change, or if it will have to be enforced upon them by the power of crushing circumstances. Sometimes when you read Mother's writing, you feel it's like ultimate truth, power of crushing circumstances. So, wake up and collaborate. Blessings. So the disciple asks, how can humanity become one? She says, by becoming conscious of its origin. What is the way of making the consciousness of human unity grow in man? She says, spiritual education. This is a big word, so I'll not get into it. She has written about it, explained it. Spiritual education, but essentially is to understand creation from above downwards, the Ashwath tree. So if you understand the fundamental principles that operate, they are spiritual principles. And from there you understand everything in creation. For example, unity in diversity. Then one understands this. But you can, spiritual education is not about sects and cults. So she says spiritual education, that is to say an education which gives more importance to the growth of the spirit than to any religious or moral teaching, or to the material so-called knowledge. So there is a greater knowledge from which you can understand even the most material things. That's the beauty. And if you look at ancient India, many of even the most material knowledge can come from that. It's amazing. If you actually, Bhagavad Puran, we are reading this. There's so many times description of vimanas. The vimanas which are flying all across. But they are not earthly vimanas. It's very clear that they are beings of other planes who are using viman and they are traveling in that. So probably some kind of this thing existed And some people used to catch it. Da Vinci, he made drawings like that. Our Rishi Bharadwaj, they made drawings like that. Okay, to manifest upon earth is a difficult and challenging task. Pushpak Viman. So there have been such celestial things which are just like Vimanas. They use the word Viman actually. If you were to translate in, and many on the house. Like if you read one, I'll say the story of small aside, Shivji's wedding, not Shivji's wedding, Dakshi Yagya. So in Dakshi Yagya, so Mata Sati asks Lord Shiva that, you know, I want to go, my dad has called me and all. She said, see, if you want to go, you can go, but he has not called me, you must remember that. So it is going to be a very insulting experience. She doesn't listen, but she is quietly, should I not? Then the description goes that she sees many of the gods and celestial beings going in Viman. That's how the description goes. It's Purana. You know, it definitely written way before at least the first aircraft. This is for sure. So she sees all these celestial beings going in Viman. And then she feels the urge more and more. So at some point, she just goes. She says, it's okay. I'll go. So it's very amazing, that description. It's just a small little description, but this is written way back. So change of consciousness can actually, growth of consciousness can give us much more powerful secrets than what we have now. So she's asked, what is a change of consciousness? She says, a change of consciousness is equivalent to a new birth. A birth into a higher sphere of existence. How can a change of consciousness change the life upon earth? She says, a change in human consciousness will make possible the manifestation upon earth of a higher force, a purer light, a more total truth. Nothing but a radical change of consciousness can save humanity from the terrible plight into which it is plunged. All these so-called practical means are a childishness by which men blind themselves so as not to see the true need and soul remedy. So this answers what's happening in the ashram. So many people ask, are you doing any philanthropy, feeding the poor, distributing some nice things in the prison and all that? No. We are doing something far more difficult. All this you can do, you can keep on doing. It doesn't change. So we are working toward change of consciousness. So how do you change your consciousness? You know, Arjav the poet, famous poet, he was a British, forgetting his name. But Shobhinda was given the name Arjav. Arjav is frankness, simplicity. So someone came from outside. I think his name was Roland Nixon. Anyway, someone came from outside and asked him, what is it you people are doing? He says, you won't understand. He says, no, I believe you are writing poetry. He says, yes, I write poetry. I'm also teaching mathematics. He says, no, but how will it help? He says, I am working upon conquering my ego. So this was too much. Conquering your ego. He said, how it will help? He said, each one who does that will help the whole world. So because you create a possibility. What it means is that we are all like cars in the making, new model. So first in a laboratory you make it. Shobhinda used the word ashram is a laboratory. So if you can succeed here in doing it, so the greatest difficulties will also be here. It's up to you. You see the difficulty or you see the possibility. But if it is done here, it opens a door of possibility into humanity. Then it's like, fast printing. First is, first car, experimental model. So we are all under experiment of the divine. And each little victory, she has used this word, will help mankind. So it's a very occult kind of action because we are all interconnected. It has a tendency to spread like contagion. That's the solution that the mother has given. And that's what the ashram is trying to implement. Knowingly, unknowingly, not everybody is conscious of it. But doesn't matter. If you enter this force field, if I may say so, you are in the laboratory. And if you are in the laboratory, all the conditions of the laboratory will begin to operate. It's like you can't say if you enter a giant washing machine that, look here, I am sorry, I came by mistake, door is closed, now you go through the topsy-turvy washing process. You can't say, look here, I am sorry, I entered by mistake. You have to come out after that super rin ka chamatkar. So this is what the ashram is. This is what she is trying here. How much it succeeds or not is a different thing, but one must understand what's happening here. So the difficulties and the possibilities. So each one working out, and each one is given a certain, she says, to make it easier, to each one she is giving what he can handle. So we are not given cosmic difficulties. But we are very smart people. As Shubhendu says in one of his aphorisms, that, well, the sense of sin was created. In eyes of God, there is no sin and virtue. So he says the sense of sin was created so that man can look inside and change himself. But man has, with his cunning, he has responded with a cunning that he has become more acutely aware of the sins of others and oblivious to his own. So we have responded to God's sense of sin, okay. Everybody else. But if one becomes aware and changes, it's of course a tremendous thing. It requires, of course, grace and some effort from our side. But if we understand that it's a living laboratory, then we will put these things in perspective and understand the purpose for which we are here. So, whole of humanity is here. Every type. That's why Shobindu was asked that, why didn't you call only sattvic people? So he says, if I called only sattvic people, the problem of rajasic and tamasic people will be left untouched. So you'll see, some people who will just, who will eat a lot of rice, they will take. There used to be one person I know. So in the beginning I said, oh, he is eating so much. Then after reading Sri Aurobindo, you understand. And when you see the inner life, it's different. So both levels it is happening. So each one is given their own little difficulty, and it's like clean your own little plate, and if you can do it, you have helped the world move a step closer, and you have helped the great work of the divine upon earth. And then she gave another message to Sri Aurobindo Society for the birth centenary. A new world based on truth and refusing the old slavery to falsehood wants to take birth. Now this is 72. So on one side, supramental manifestation has begun. But it wants to take birth. It wants people to see what has happened to children. We don't understand. If you ask one thing which children are most averse to, my reading as a psychologist is hypocrisy. They just don't like. Everything else chalega, but hypocrisy they don't like. They can be very sharp, whether it's parent or anybody, it doesn't matter. So now there is nothing like respect which is has to be given because of certain fixed relation in the society. You have to earn respect, and nowadays children use this word, authenticity. I have heard so many times, authenticity. You can't get respect just because you are elder or just because you are parent. You will get it if you are authentic. They like authenticity. And authenticity is so difficult. To put up a show is so easy. So she says, a new world based on truth and refusing the old slavery to falsehood wants to take birth. In all countries there are people who know it, at least feel it. I could give so many examples from Beatles to India, a new urge, a new aspiration. It has come in so many ways in certain songs. One of them I remember is Hum Honge Kamyab Ek Din. Now, you know, they are just spontaneous aspiration, urge for something truer, more beautiful, something like love which is not, doesn't diminish with time, all this aspiration has woken up in humanity. So she is, in all countries, there are people who know it, at least feel it. To them we call, will you collaborate? So she is calling whom? Not people of a certain religion or people who are very highly disciplined. This inner thing is important. People who want that there should be a new world based on something true, more beautiful. And then she says something very interesting. Old methods cannot do for this new work. Not only a new consciousness must be firmly established, but also new process must be found before anything truly effective can be done. So ashram is very interesting because you don't find here a single place which can be called as meditation hall. There is no meditation hall here. You know the reason? Because you are supposed to be in a state of inner meditation all the time. You don't cut life into two. Of course you can meditate near the samadhi, but you can't say that, okay, I have meditated for half an hour, I have paid my dues to God. Now rest of the time I'll do whatever I feel like. He has to do his bit. So that's why. So there are so many such wonderful things. I feel, it's a pity that people have not read Mother's writings. And I say this because most of the time I see, even in Sri Aurobindo's circles, even in talks, all about life divine, it's like a prestige issue, you know. Whether people understand the life divine or not, but talks on life divine all over I see. And it's so silly sometimes, but that's a different story. Each one is free. Yes, one must talk about them. But if you read the mother's writings, what is it? The same truth. But here, life divine, where in every sphere of life she has brought in the divine aspect. So all this is the life divine, but in practice. So people often, because they come and tell me that I have purchased the life divine and started reading it. What other books should I pick up? So they ask me very often. I say collected works of the mother. Then they're not very like, you know, he is thinking that I am not very developed or something. They don't realize that, you know, what you are missing. She is saying very profound truth in simple way. That's to her credit. So, for example, destiny and determinism. Now you see, go anywhere standard. People will say you have karma and you have consequence, isn't it? Heard about multiple destinies? And actually, if you hear this, then look back and see how it connects with us. So what she speaks about, multiple destinies simultaneously operating. And actually, if we really study ourselves, we don't have to read a scripture to understand. We at the same time have, you know, our body wants one thing, our vital wants something else, let's say lower vital wants something else. Another part wants emotional, vital wants something else. The mind is looking for something else, and there is also some spiritual current somewhere. So each of these parts has its own destiny. So what will come out will depend on the strength or the weakness of these parts. So that's why you will see certain people, they had an aspiration or have an aspiration, but you will see after many, many years or decades, still that aspiration has remained only a little aspiration burning in a corner. And something in them is unhappy about the greatness murdered. That's how I'm paraphrasing from Savitri. And yet they accept the fall because they have to live like, you know, they are attracted towards something else. And this is in freedom you have to do that. That's the beauty. It's not that anything is lost permanently. That she has said very clearly, that any spiritual effort is not lost. You will come back. It will grow strong. But there are so many times I have seen. I have seen the reverse also. That the spiritual aspiration is very strong, and though you have many difficulties, many different kinds of seekings and striving, still this takes over. So you see, this is so practical. It's relatable. But if you say only about karma in some life, it's not relatable because you just don't know. You can't figure out what's happening in your life. So this is about destiny. So it's based on one of her conversations. The conversation, this is very interesting because this is a talk on 30th December 1950. So after Sri Aurobindo's physical withdrawal for 12 days, the mother didn't step out. Then she started her thing. Then she saw that children are, you know, also she started these classes. First she gave a blessing and a message card. I think it was after 14 days or something. I may not remember the, perhaps 12 days after. And then they saw her smile. They were all like, okay. Then she started the classes 30th December 1950. So it's a very special class. And she's asked about, there's something which she has written in conversations 1929 to 31. So this is the 31 conversation. So the disciple reads something from it and then ask questions. So I'll ask I'll just read from some passages. So one of the places she says, there are people whose destiny is very complex, giving the impression that the things which happen to them are quite unexpected and unforeseeable. Unless one can see by some means other than the ordinary. Classic example in our own context was Dilip Kumar Roy. On one side, Sri Aurobindo has called him as a friend, son. These are the words he has used. But he had another destiny, another part. Satprem actually mentions it in Agenda. That mother, there are three things that I want. Very clearly he says. One is I want this, which you are giving. This engages me, this transformation part. But there is also in me a wanderlust. He wants to travel to different places. And then there is a part in me which is very, which wants human love, very human love. And see how mother arranges everything for him. So, but ultimately this takes over. So you may start with three or four destinies, but it's like after some time this window closes, that window closes. So basically if divine is closing windows, you're lucky. Otherwise you're confused. But each one, she gives the freedom. And you can go through very complex destinies. And that also brings a recompense. That's the other part. That if you opt for a complex destiny, if you are a very complex being, she says, at the end, you will have many difficulties, but the realization will be far more perfect. This also she has said. Whereas there are people who follow a narrow path and they have a simpler. They will all touch that point, but complex. Like, for example, Krishna speaks of Samagram Mam. He is the only person who speaks like that. And you look at Krishna, difficult to put him in a slot. You can't put him in one category. He's a warrior, he's a lover, he's a prophet who sees into the future. He's a rishi, he's a yogi, he's a king. He's also a, you know, a perfect organizer when he organizes the different details of the war craft and state craft. You name it and he has it. He's a dancer. So many things have come in the name of Krishna. He's a dancer. He's a, what is it called? Flautist. So many things simultaneously. And yet he is one Krishna. So he uses the word Samagram Mam. He says rarely anybody is ready to realize Samagram Mam. Now when we look at Sri Aurobindo's life, there is a tendency people will say, oh, in past life he must have been this yogi sitting in Mahimalaya. Everybody likes to, you know, say that a yogi's life, if you say in previous life I was this yogi, that guru, generally. So when you see Sri Aurobindo's life, who was he? He says, I was Francis I, Leonardo da Vinci, Augustus Caesar, my God. Mother, in her immediate previous life, she is Queen Catherine of Russia. Till date they remember her. Because she changed the understanding. And what she established for Russia is something which they just cannot forget. I've been to her her tomb and there's such a powerful presence. I felt, at least, of course, due to my connection with mother, even physically with her in the life when she was Queen Catherine. So I suddenly connected with that. But they're not like she was doing a... But in one of her lives, she was a princess in Himalaya. But they were also Rishi Agastya and Lopamudra. So when you look at it, a whole panorama, and possibly in Sri Krishna's time. Now this is all based on what Amal Kiran and Nirodha have from their own understanding and material collated. So also in Sri Krishna's time, people ask, who is Sri Aurobindo? Now, yes, Krishna is fully fused with him. But who is he at that point of time? He is Aniruddha, the grandson of Krishna, Pradyumna's son. And Sri Aurobindo writes Usha Haran, that famous kavya, which apparently it is said that Usha, the daughter of Banasur, was none else but Mrilalini Devi. This is the, again, we cannot say for sure. But they have gone through all this. Sri Aurobindo sometimes would have this feeling of some strange sensation on the neck. So sometimes he would touch his neck like this. And someone asked him, what is it? And Sri Aurobindo said, well, it's the guillotine experience, as in French Revolution when he is Danton. And fighting against or defecting from him is Nalini Daya's Robespierre. His Jujutsu in previous life as Kauro. It's when you read all this, he's Paris or behind Paris in the siege of Troy. And when you read all this, then you realize that how personalities develop. It is said that there are 360 personalities within a human being. And when you grow, develop more and more complex through many lives, all these personalities are active. And that's one of the big challenges of harmonizing them. So many who come here, you see some of the people, and it's difficult to understand. Because these personalities have developed, each with an independent life. Mother speaks of her own different personalities, which came up, and that's how we see in her the full manifestation of Maheshwari, Mahakali, Mahalakshmi, Mahasaraswati, and of course the Divine Mother, because each of them has been behind someone or the other. So this makes destiny a very complex thing, not as simple as karma you did and therefore you are suffering and therefore you are enjoying, but that's a different story. So there is something she has written on which she gives a commentary. Each one of these beings or states of being, sometimes not a being, like many of these past life when mother was asked, she said, yes, I was behind them. So it's not that she exactly took that human form, but she was the driving force. For example, Sri Aurobindo is the driving force behind Danton, which is a different thing altogether. She says, victorious spirit of Murat. During that French Revolution. She was Joan of Arc. So she was means it's not necessary that the psychic being has come like that, but there is something which is behind, which is like a driving force. And all this would come to her. And this is there in our, interestingly, it is there in our scriptures, but we don't read it like that. So I'll collate a story. So see, Mata Parvati is born on earth, unlike Sati who belongs to the subtle planes. So Mata Parvati is a very unique incarnation because unlike all other gods, goddesses, she is born as the daughter of the Himalaya. So she has to engage in tapasya. Unlike, Lakshmiji comes from the Sagar Manthan and is given to Lord Vishnu. Saraswati is created by Brahma and he falls in love with her and they are together. That story, many Saraswatis and Brahmas are there, not going into that. But with Shiva, very interestingly. Now, I am resisting myself from many things understanding about Shiva, but just to take this part. Mata Sati belongs to the subtle plane, Daksha, Prajapati and all that. No, still material creation has not started. But when Sati abandons a body in the yajna, sacrifices, her spirit is reborn as Mata Parvati. Where in material creation, him wants, she is, that's why her first name is Shaila Bala. If you read all the, and it's of course applies to Kundalini Yoga also. Shaila Bala, the daughter of the mountains, this gross material energy in which this divine energy is born. That's why you have the Shivlingam In material creation, there is the divine energy. I have to just hold myself and stay focused. Okay. It's so fascinating. But the interesting part about it is that because she is born on earth as the daughter of the mountains, she has to do tapasya to once again find Shiva. So she does the tapasya for all the earth. So when she goes to Shiva's abode, now we come to this part which we are reading. She sees that there is a cave. So she feels that Shiva says, don't go there. Anywhere else you can go, don't go there. Now when you say don't go there, what happens? So same thing happened to Mata. Parvati also, this Shiva's play. I take it like a play. Don't go there. Now she is for some days, don't go, don't go. Then one day she is cannot help it. So she goes there. And then when she goes, she sees many of the beings of the past. They come to her and say, I am yours, I am yours. And she is surrounded by beings. All her lives of different, because she has assumed a human body. The moment you assume a human body, there are, to the psychic being, there is a connection of lives. And all these lives come to her suddenly. That we also want, because they were waiting for this moment. And Shiva knows, he has told, one day I will take you, but right now you are not ready for this. Now when they come prematurely, then she is flooded with all these lives, multiple lives. Because she has taken a human body. This doesn't apply to Shiva. The moment you take a human body, there are interconnected journeys which come to you. So as we go through lives, we get more and more complex, because the divine has this aspect also, complexity, and it wants to manifest itself. So destiny is not as simple as we understand. So she says, a person may have a great many personalities within him. It's not a discredit, first of all, to start with. But it's a difficulty. 10 or 20, for example, and each one has its own destiny. This is where the problem comes. In the physical world, an individuality means a human body. So, in a human body, there are many individualities, each one with its own destiny. In fact, each part will have its own destiny. That's why it's difficult to understand, as simple as people say, past life mein kiya tha, to ye life mein ho gaya, which is all easy to explain. Difficult to understand. What happens then? Conflicts, frictions, inner disorder created by these individualities which are unable to get on with one another. One wants one thing, other wants another thing. So we have a khichdi. Now making khichdi is okay. If you can make a nice khichdi, wonderful. But most often than not, it's like they are struggling to push. And that's why we see in people, until a certain point is reached, you have to take one thread and go with that. And if your best is to take the highest spiritual destiny, then after some time you'll see that the others will fall in place, and then they can get integrated with it. Changed and integrated. But this is after a while. The strongest one gets the upper hand. It is not only dominant over the others, but curbs them to stop them from rebelling. So it's possible that a vital destiny may stop the spiritual destiny. Once somebody asked Dhuman Bhai, and this has happened to people even living here for a few years, and then they were in, you know, government is going to give you some big post, and this was ambition, how it works. Oh, I will help the world. So, it took the better and they went. So, someone asked Dhuman Bhai that such and such person, so famous, so beautifully progressing, now he has taken this destiny, will he come back? He says, yes. When? He says, who knows, maybe many lives. That's why Mother says that when you have the door of spiritual destiny open for you, don't refuse that. Go through the struggles and the challenges. If this door doesn't open, it's okay. You are practicing something, little of everything. But when you are, that's why it's so difficult. It doesn't open just like that. But when it opens and you are admitted into it, then go through it. जिसको बोलते हैं ना आप जो होगा आप सर फूटे या मैंने तो हाँ कर दी देन प्लंज इन टू दैट फायर यू विल बी रोस्टेड डिवाइन विल मेक अ नाइस नॉट अंडा भुजिया बट नाइस टोस्ट विद देन इफ यू अलाउ टू गो थ्रू देन ऑन द टोस्ट ही विल पुट हिज बटर जैम हु विल ईट इट ही विल ईट इट And then you'll become part of the divine. When he eats you, you enter into every aspect. So it's wonderful. But that toasting is there. You'll be able to. You can't say, I don't want to be toasted and roasted. No, he'll make a nice little meal out of you. Every aspect will find its place. So that's why spiritual destiny is a thing not to be taken lightly. She has said that. As long as it is not open, it's fine. She would tell children who have studied here that I would say you have goodwill, go out, do your work or do whatever you want to do. But if you take to the path, then things become serious. See, then you can't afford to, you know, it's like as long as you are doing a practice session, it's okay. Gilli danda in the, you know, your village, mohalla, it's okay. But if you are playing test match, then you better be careful because that's how things come. So this is what she is speaking of, multiple destiny. Conflicts, friction, inner disorder. So what happens? The strongest one gets the upper hand. It is not only dominant over the others, but curves them to stop them from rebelling. And the human mind will give 100 justifications and excuses. So in the end, the unlucky ones, the repressed ones go to sleep. In this yoga, they will be woken up. Because it's a yoga of transformation. She is here talking about the general thing. Because you have to, you know, they bide their time and when that time comes, they suddenly jump up and turn everything upside down. If that happens very often, that person's life will be a very disorderly one. He will take up one thing today and go on with another tomorrow and so on. So the thing is, pick up that one thread. One thread is yoga, of course. And stay on. Doesn't matter. Whatever be the difficulties, challenges. And sometimes you will come in a department you are working. I have seen this. And the urge is to just leave. Change. Some people do that. It's not good trauma because he has said you will face the same challenge somewhere else. But if you just stay on, stick on, hold on, after some time you will see that part in you which was rebelling, revolting, that begins to change. And once that changes, you take a leap. And then when you look back, you say, oh my God, I was such a stupid fellow. Yes. And today also you are stupid, but little less stupid. You are stupid in a different part. So, it's beautiful. Then the journey becomes very beautiful because you learn the ropes. So, that's what she's teaching us. I don't think it is true to say that a person is harmonious if he has no inner complexity. So, many people think, oh, I wish I was very simple. And therefore, you will see many people who are very simple apparently and it looks like harmony. That's not harmony because you don't have elements. Maheshwariji once very interestingly in one of the Swadhyaya sessions he tells some people he was saying that no I'll take tomorrow but all these people very elderly people they said no you don't worry you please take the session we'll not trouble you or disturb you so suddenly Maheshwariji came up with a very novel thing he said that I know you are not capable of disturbing me or troubling me It was a direct reflection on ki bhai ye umar mein kya tum trouble karoge octogenarians nonagenarians so it's not about that simplicity is okay but he has to go through that whole process so she says people who have this kind of illusory harmony are usually deeply immersed in material life so that the slightest unpleasantness upsets them completely because they have nothing else. No, a truly harmonious personality implies a conscious arrangement of the inner individualities. Each thing has its place. Look at Krishna, he's a prototype. Mother, even more. Mother is like, in complexity, she surpasses anything or anyone. All the things that Sri Krishna did, which includes war, because she has fought the inner battle, Second World War. She would play tennis. She would play music. She had painting, many other aspects. She taught dance. So she wrote poetry once, wrote philosophies. So you see the complexity of the mother's life and her. No, a truly harmonious personality implies a conscious arrangement of the inner individualities. This arrangement may be effected spontaneously before birth, but that is rare. The arrangement is achieved later by means of a discipline, a proper education. Tell these different parts, look here, I understand your need, your demand, but this is my core, this is my center. All else has to be slowly organized around it. But to succeed in this, one must consciously take the psychic being as the center and arrange, harmonize the various individualities around it. True harmony, inner organization is the result of such a persistent effort. Means find the psychic being first, then harmonize everything at its place. For example, human love. When you touch it with the psychic, it's a very different thing. A love which has no expectation, no demand, and deep purity. It may even look cold. That's how she has described. I had taken that part, but we'll read it next time. It's so different from vital love, which all its hullabaloo and, joys and sorrows, which is not love. But his psychic love is so deep. It flows like a pure, clear stream. Gives itself, wanting nothing in return, no demands. So it may be very even unsettling for the other person. This is how she describes. And then she says, what events happen? They are a mix of these different destinies. So see, she changes. The whole idea of karmic law begins to change. She's not even bringing karma right now. She has talked so much about karma. But look here. She gives an example. A man steps out of his house to go to his office. He goes a certain way. Suddenly he remembers that he has left something behind. He steps back to go and get it. And just then, all the experiences she has described here, stories, are all something she has actually known. She doesn't use the word, but and several stories are like that in Mother's writings. He steps back to go and get it. And just then, in the place where he would have been if he had stepped forward, a lead pipe falls. Something in this man's consciousness, by telling him to go back, has saved his life. That is what we mean when we say that an intervention of consciousness can change destiny. In this man, there were two destinies. Among others, probably, one which wanted him to die and one which wanted him to live. I remember one very clear thing with my own this thing. Quite a number of them, but one was very amazing. So after my duty, Air Force duty morning, I am going in the scooter. Suddenly in my heart, I started strange. You can't call it a mantra. It says, be a witness, be a witness, be a witness. Now, I don't know what I have to witness, but it started like a mantra. Be a witness, be a witness. As I am taking a turn, a truck, army truck comes from that side and hits the scooter on which I was there. A scooter falls, but very strangely somehow I am on 2 feet. And this continuing, be a witness, be a witness. Now the man who was driving, he was suddenly, oh my God, because for him, I am an officer, saab, kya ho gaya. So he got down, but this was going on, be a witness. So I picked up the scooter, started. So I said, don't worry. He said, sir, kuch. I said, don't worry. It was such a beautiful feeling. Even once a head-on collision with an army truck. Be a witness. Now, this is like something had cautioned me and yet it had to go through something maybe big which just got brushed aside through. But it could have taken the other route. So, all these things are there where there are interventions which actually save you from imminent catastrophe. So, what was it? So, the disciples, very intelligent disciples he had, they say, can't this be called chance? So, They are not going to accept because mother has said so. So she has to explain. No, because chance is something quite incoherent. Something that occurs for no reason. And if you believe that life is something incoherent, you will have much to learn. On the contrary, it is quite coherent. Each little thing is exactly determined, and if something makes you feel that it is chance, it is because you know nothing about the determinisms. Now, in my case, what was happening? If this inner inwardness would not have come, maybe I would have just gone in the normal speed. It must definitely, it would have affected my driving. Very calm, quiet, you become, no, when you are being a witness. And I escaped something which could have been disastrous. So that's how she works. So it's not chance, it's safety. They are completely beyond you because there are innumerable interweaving laws and you know nothing about them. So karmic law, the so-called, we are not the only fellows deciding our future. There are so many forces which are operating in this universe. So if something happens according to these laws, you say it's a miracle or chance. People who make an effort to progress and grow in consciousness realize that what at one time in their lives they took to be a disaster or a calamity, now so interesting she is saying, may appear 15 years later like a blessing, an effect of grace, some highest good. In relationship issues, very often I have seen this. That time you feel, oh my God, my world is crashing, my world. But if you accept with grace, after 15 years, say, thank God, my world crashed and I am saved. So there are ways that grace intervenes. And from a higher standpoint, it is quite obvious that if you bring your highest consciousness down into your ordinary life, it will bring the greatest good into your life. But she also says this greatest good may not be what your vital wants. Vital wants its own way, its own destiny. But your highest good is that everything gets smashed and you discover. So things may happen and people may not understand that why this is happening. Well, it's happening because God loves you. As simple as that, if you ask me very simply. People who have made some progress always have this experience. They see clearly that the so-called disaster was in fact the starting point of their ascension. An ascension which could not have taken place without it. If someone has the inner vision and is able to enter his higher consciousness at will, he will see that it is the greatest good that happens to him when he is in contact with the highest consciousness. It's like in the Vedas, it described in a same thing in a different way, that you rise into a hill, then if you have to go to the next hill, you have to come down. You see in Darjeeling, if you from Darjeeling, you can see Kanchenjunga morning. But if you have to reach Kanchenjunga and if you are not Hanuman, you have to come down. Travel quite a distance, then rise. So that's how things happen. And then see one last example. I shall give you a simple example. But it may occur in any state of consciousness. A stone falls. If it fulfills its destiny, it will fall to the ground, won't it? But you are there and you have a vital or a mental will, one or the other, and you catch the stone in your hand, you have changed the destiny of the stone. Such a simple and beautiful and practical example. That's why whatever is happening, tell it to the mother and pray that may your will determine what's going to happen in my life. That's the safest and the coolest thing to do. A leaf falls onto the ground if it follows its normal destiny. You have a vital will. You take the leaf in your hand. You can offer it to the divine. You have changed the destiny of the leaf. This happens millions of times in the universe and nobody notices it because it is so common. George Van Vreckheim, who wrote this book on the mother, lovely book. So he was once sharing an experience. He was in a very distressed state. Everybody goes through. So he was sitting near the samadhi and thought, is there any hope for me? And, you know, I'm feeling so low. And then as he was feeling low, he saw one caterpillar around, him, he picked it up and on a leaf, and in that moment just put it on the samadhi. Then this thought strikes me. Oh, this caterpillar could go to the samadhi. And then he thought, then why can't I from my fallen state reach there? Mother literally gave him a demonstration of what is intervention. A caterpillar doesn't even know it's going some direction. So all these are interventions. Only we have to learn to be happy and trust. But imagine that you have a very high range of consciousness. If into the determinism down here you can bring by aspiration, an urge, a prayer, a higher consciousness, if you can get hold of your higher consciousness, so to say, and bring it into the material destiny, everything would immediately be changed. But because you do not see or do not understand what is happening, you say that it is a chance or a miracle. So you see, karma can be changed. Destiny can be changed. We didn't know this. And this is so practical. You can actually experience it. I have had several experiences of this kind. Of direct interventions. With a prayer, without a prayer. It completely changed things. And then she completes by saying, this is precisely what we want to do by bringing down into the physical and material world the supramental force and consciousness. At first it works by diffusion, not directly. Its working is more or less veiled, more veiled and distorted as it descends into the physical world until it becomes almost imperceptible. That she has described even in the Bhagavad we are reading that how it gets distorted. No, S is on the Gita, we are reading that. If it could work here directly without this distortion and this veiling, it would change everything in an absolutely unexpected way. Then she closes by saying, I hope you will get this concrete example one day. Personally, honestly, so many examples at least I have had of interventions of the grace, changing things. That moment you don't even know and you have a trust. And then later on when you look back, you say, my God, this was the most beautiful thing to happen. I didn't understand that time. So... Gemma.